Welcome to Entrench, a 21 Pilots podcast. Hello, local dreamers. Welcome to Entrench. My name is Anna, and this is episode 63, Hometown. Make sure you listen to the song beforehand and are ready for an in-depth analysis of track 12 off Blurry Face. Guys, I hope I sound much better. Apparently, my mic setting moved off of omnidirectional. I don't know when, and I don't know how, but we're back, and I'm sorry if for a long time you were, like, irritated with my sound quality, but you know what? It's in the past, and I hope you can forgive me. My pop filter, I feel like, also was way too far away from my mic, so I think when I initially got it, I probably sounded a lot further away for, like, a very long time. So, you know what? We have actually, like, I've actually thought to, like, review my latest episodes and be like, is this my best sound quality? I don't think so. I don't know why I don't do this regularly, but listen, we're learning from our mistakes. Frankly, I think I probably sound really good right now, and we're gonna just move right along. What does everyone think of last semester? Because I loved it, and I cried, and also the video. I think what made me the most emotional was how Tyler walked into the audience just like he did in Car Radio, and I just love random nods to other songs, especially other songs that are much older. There's something so reassuring and comforting, I think, about, like, finding connections and ways that things haven't changed. You know, that's such a just general comfort, because so much of life does change all the time, and so when you feel like something is kind of, you know, reiterative of why you loved it to begin with, like a Vessel era for so many people, like, it's always beautiful to find the, like, scavenger hunt of reasons why not everything has changed. And so, you know, it's just kind of, like, nostalgic and comforting all at once that not everything has to drastically change. And I love how a cultural artifact like 21 Pilots can, like, call back to itself in being new but also the same at the same time. I think that's very needed as we live in such a transitory world. So I hope you guys liked it. You know, I'll leave it at that, I think, because that's why we have these episodes. We're not going to get there for quite some time, but I don't want to steal future Anna's thunder. So let's let her have her moment when she gets here. So for now, we're discussing Hometown and also the fact that I got pit tickets for Detroit. So if anyone else is going to be at Detroit, email me. Let me know. I would love to see you. I'd love to say hi. And also, there's a huge chance that I will be recording a podcast in line. Because why would I not utilize this opportunity? Like, this is the perfect opportunity. Yeah, I feel like it didn't really work out at the last two concerts because I kind of got there right at the last minute. But this is the first time where, like, I'll be sitting around for quite a while and, you know, might as well. If nothing else, like, it'll be fun to just talk to fans and hopefully, if nothing else, get some, like, fun sound bites and hear from passionate people. Like, what more could you want, really? So I think it'll be a fun time. I mean, it will absolutely be a fun time. And I know that, like, my friend Michael, for instance, is going to get to go to his first 21 Pilots concert. I hope some of you guys get to as well. I would love to hear any of your tour updates, so feel free to gush to me. I would love to fangirl with you as I can. So, yes, Hometown. Speaking of tour, you know, Hometown. We all have our hometowns that the guys will be coming around to. And I love how this song is universal in that way, like taking the concept of a hometown, colliding it with the spiritual themes, and it can apply to just about anywhere. And so I like how we can all have very vivid images in our head of very different hometowns, but know that we all feel the same sentiments towards them. So I love the ways that they find such universal things to discuss that are also specific at the same time. I feel like it can be hard to find a line between universal and specific. And I think this song is a good example of finding that line. So the background, as I feel like I always say this is repetitive, but I mean it is, but we're gonna say it anyway. This song was recorded in Tanzania and it was produced by Mike Elizondo. So I feel like there's a couple producers this album rotates between, and a few locations that it rotates between. So if anyone's super nerdy about it though, like maybe someone's deciding they like a certain producer more based on their songs, I don't know, but you know, you'll have the information. It's your choice if you want to keep it in your brain or let it go. So to each your own. So how about we just jump right into the song? Also, this is a rare sighting of me recording in the daytime. I know, this is a big deal. But it's so worth it though when I can, because I'm like, the amount of added energy that I have. And it's not that I don't care about the other podcasts, it's just, you know, you have much different energy levels before bedtime than you do other parts of the day, obviously. But, you know, you have limited options when you're a working adult too, so cut me some slack a little bit. We start with the refrain. My shadow tilts its head at me. Spirits in the dark are waiting. I will let the wind go quietly. I will let the wind go quietly. One of the first things I thought of actually was Peter Pan. Are we shocked? Maybe someone is, but I'm not. But when I think of shadows and like this idea that the shadow is like somehow separate from him, immediately think of Peter Pan. Like, okay, we gotta go like sew the shadow back on. Yeah, so in like Peter Pan, and in this instance, it's showing that the shadow has this kind of mind of its own, that it's very similar, obviously, our shadow mimics us, but this idea that as it's tilting its head, which is now what he's doing, it's similar but also very distinctive and separate at the same time. And I think that's kind of the bedrock through which lies are cultivated. We start with something that's very like resonant and makes sense, and then we twist it. I think with a lot of personality tests, and I think specifically with Enneagram, there's also this term like the shadow side to every personality type, which obviously is also just like, you could just say sin, or like the different like temptations maybe certain personalities are more prone to, perhaps. But yeah, basically in this sense with personality stuff, like the shadow side is representative of the part of you that does not, I think in the Enneagram the context is the part of you that does not reflect the character of God. And so for like type four, which is what I most like, the shadow side tends to have a lot to do with envy, because fours are very creative, and so kind of the antithesis to the goodness in individuality is like the badness of envy, and kind of leaning heavily into uniqueness, but also like because there's this intense insecurity of like not being like other people and constantly considering what other people have that you don't, and things like that. So similarly, I don't remember for all the other types, but basically the shadow side is like the antithesis to the strengths kind of each personality type. So I just wanted to throw that in there as well with this imagery and the different things that shadow can represent besides just darkness and badness. So I just thought those brought some different layers onto it. And then also, he's looking at the shadow in this context as it opens with the shadow tilting its head. You have to be looking at it in order to see it. Ironically, I'm also staring at a tree right now that has this huge shadow spilling out onto the grass. But yeah, in this way, he could be setting it up as like fixating on the badness and the shadow and feeling a little less connected from himself and a little more transfixed by the gloom, which makes sense because, as we'll see, the hometown is flooded in darkness. Spirits in the dark are waiting. I think this builds off the concept of shadow, but it's obviously completely separate from the self, whereas the shadow is semi-related. And for this, I pulled up 1 Peter 5:8. I was actually surprised. I got a decent amount of scripture references for this one. So, 1 Peter 5:8, this chapter is about shepherd the flock of God. It says, "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." This idea of the spirits being in the dark very much reminded me of like they're hiding and they're waiting in order to pounce. And the imagery of pouncing immediately made me think of this comparison to a lion who's just sitting and waiting for its prey to be in the most ideal spot to take advantage of it. And that's very much the depiction of spiritual warfare that I think is being depicted here. But he is cognizant of that, which is crucial as well, to know that you're not just like at the mercy of everything, but you do play a part and you can have a relationship and change the relationship into which you let these things influence you, and where you decide to redirect yourself towards is crucial to how you work through this and how you cope through the darkness and the lies and everything that's shadowed and twisted. And as such, part of this is, in this case, letting the wind go quietly. The wind, in either sense, I don't know what exactly it's referring to, if it's referring to evil shadow spirits or if it's referring more to good and God. In either case, it's very much something that's invisible. And of course, spiritual warfare is made up of invisible forces. And so in this case, it's kind of this idea of knowing that all of this is swirling around, but also just radically accepting the fact that you can't change it, you can't control it, good or bad. And this idea of like, yes, you're distinctive and you have a part to play and a direction to direct yourself in the midst of spiritual warfare, but at the same time, there's also an extent to which you're a bit helpless too, and that there's no way to fully avoid any type of spiritual forces floating around. I feel like this all sounds very like abstract so far, but I think it becomes a lot easier to depend on God and to rely on his strength when we accept that we can't control anything, that we can't somehow extinguish the darkness altogether and the dark forces that very much do exist in this belief system. Going into verse 1, now that we've set up like our position in the midst of everything that's swirling around, he says, and I believe he's speaking to God, be the one to take my soul and make it undone. Be the one to take me home and show me the sun. I know you can bring the fire. I can bring the bones. I know you will make the fire. My bones will make it grow. Did anyone else think of Harry Potter? Because that also immediately came to mind with like this idea of fire and bones and like putting this concoction together. In that sense, it was very grotesque and evil, but I think this can also be done in a positive spiritual way with Christ. So I first noted that with taking my soul and making it undone, this idea that God is like slowly unraveling us to undo, is to like detangle a knot, was like one of the first images that I thought of. And also just this statement and request in one of wanting God to come along and continue to shape and to mold our soul. And this is why I wanted to also mention Jeremiah 18, 1 through 6, which goes along with that imagery of molding. So this chapter is about the potter and the clay. As you can imagine, the imagery goes great. Verses 1 through 6 say, "The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will let you hear my words. So I went down to the potter's house, and there he was working at his wheel. And the vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hand, and he reworked it into another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to do. Then the word of the Lord came to me, 'O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter has done?' declares the Lord. Behold, like the clay in the potter's hand, so are you in my hand, O house of Israel." And of course, I underlined, he reworked it into another vessel. I love how this kind of has both the connection to the image of undoing your soul, like hometown, but it also connects to Vessel, the album. Two for one. So as we see in this passage, it's evident that God never stops working. He's constantly trying to rework us into something better, into something more like Christ, which is a work that he never stops doing once we have accepted him. Taking this position of like feeling surrounded by darkness and fixating on shadow, he's now combating this with a request for God to come and do in his heart what he has promised to do, and also surrendering at the same time to allow God to do that. I love how so many prayers can kind of be like a declaration and surrender at the same time, and I think this is a good example of that. He then goes on to say, "Be the one to take me home and show me the sun," which I think could mean like eternally with heaven, but also just in the present, that God can be able to take our fixation on the darkness and redirect it to goodness. It's so easy to fixate on the darkness with the news and current events and gossip, social media. It all is very like negativity focused, and I feel like the struggle we always see with new social media is it starts out a very seemingly positive place, and then like for me currently, I think of Instagram the most, it's over the years turned into a much more negative place, which I think just pays tribute to the fact that if humans are good at anything, it's to fixate on negativity over time, and we're so bad at fixating on the positivity, and I think social media is like the epitome of that, and an example over and over that no matter how many different iterations of this thing that we create, it always ends up turning bad, because that's human nature, is to just fixate on the bad and completely forget about all of the goodness. And that's why, even though as corny as it can be, and obviously time and place, so it's not just toxic positivity, but gratitude really is a huge coping mechanism to combat mental illness and a lot of that temptation to just fixate inward, and also fixating on negativity inward. And when we redirect to really focus on the positive, even if it's small things, especially when it's small things, because life is made up of so much more mundaneness and minuteness than big things, we realize how much that actually does outweigh the bad. And so I actually was like just talking to someone else about this at work, one of my coworkers, about how, yeah, when we stop to really like consider, okay, I have a roof over my head and all of these basics that are actually like the biggest things we could ever need, we do come up with a list that's like 12 times longer than all the negative things weighing on us. And I think that's one of the biggest lies, that the negativity is stronger, is because it feels like it is. It will always feel like it is more than the positive, you know, we'll always fixate on the negative comments over the positive, but if you actually put them side to side in a list, it's always clear that the positivity is much more abundant in number. Also, I feel like a good way to think through coping is that it doesn't have to look one certain way. Speaking of like gratitude, for example, it doesn't just mean that we have to like come up with a list in our mind. That might be really, really hard for some people. It might be really easy for other people. So maybe that could also look like writing something down throughout the day, or just trying to come up with like one thing per hour that you could think of. Or yeah, there's so many ways that even one type of coping can look, and it doesn't have to just look one certain way. Maybe you think of something and then you voice record it and you play it back to yourself later to remember what that piece of gratitude was. So also just maybe try to think of the ways that you can creatively cope as well, and not just be grateful for like whatever conventional thing that you think of, but imagine all the ways that you can be grateful. And you don't have to just do it one specific way. You don't just have to write it down. You don't just have to think of X many things. Yeah, I think coping can become a lot easier and less daunting when we remember that it doesn't have to just look one right way. There really is no one right way to do gratitude or to pray or anything for that matter. So I hope that can be encouraging when things feel too hard, or when you don't feel like you have enough energy. You probably do have enough energy, but maybe not for the specific things that you're trying to force yourself to do, but maybe there's other things that you do have energy for instead. I hope that makes sense. I think that makes sense. So after he says these statements, I forgot, I also pulled in Philippians 4:8 for show me the Son, which is the verse on, you know, if there's anything good, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And it lists all the like traits of things that we could focus on, from pureness to goodness. So that's definitely a great one that I think of often when I am trying to redirect myself as well. And that's the thing too, if you have trouble coming up with things to be grateful for, you can also look at Philippians 4:8, and even these ideas of like righteousness, pureness, goodness can give you maybe some ideas, a starting point to think of some things. And if you can't think of any for yourself, maybe even just like consider what some could be for other people, and then maybe that'll also give you ideas too. So then it moves into, I know you can bring the fire, I can bring the bones, I know you'll make the fire, my bones will make it grow. And I related this concept of fire and bones to Jeremiah 20, verse 9. So not just a Harry Potter connection, but also a scripture connection, which I actually pulled this one from the Genius Notes. So thank you to whoever initially connected to this verse. Verse 9 says, if I say I will not mention him or speak any more in his name, there is in my heart as it were a burning fire shut up in my bones, and I am weary with holding it in, and I cannot. So this chapter is about Jeremiah persecuted by Pashur. And Pashur was a priest, chief officer in the house of the Lord, and he obviously, as you can tell by the title, like, did not treat Jeremiah well. And let me just, I'm just looking a little more to understand the context for this verse, because that is very important to any scripture that we're going to talk about. So verses 7 and 8 say, O Lord, you have deceived me, and I was deceived. You are stronger than I, and you have prevailed. I have become a laughingstock all the day. Everyone mocks me. For whenever I speak, I cry out. I shout violence and destruction. For the word of the Lord has become for me a reproach and derision all day long. So he's kind of in the spot with verse 9 of bitterness, of having been severely persecuted, debating, like, just not speaking about God because it's bringing him so much trouble. But he can't rest content to do that because there's a burning fire in his heart. and it's exhausting trying to hold it in. And so in that way, this verse is this idea that once the Spirit is inside of us, because I feel like the Spirit is always described as like a fire inside of us, we can't deny the truth that we have, even if we want to. Not only because it's like the foundation through which we live, but also because like God is literally in us once we've accepted Him, and He cannot be contained, right? He is beyond human comprehension, and He's certainly beyond human categorization. He's not just like a checklist that we can monitor and look at when we want to, you know. He's always going to exist far outside of our control. And because of that, you know, He also puts this conscience on our heart that kind of nags at us when we don't live into the way that He's wired us, because we know how He's wired us, and we can't just let go of that just because it's difficult or it brings trials, as it inevitably will. And as scripture discusses, that we should not be surprised when we meet trials of various kinds, just like Jesus did. But this idea of the fire and the bones coming together in the lyrics of Hometown, I think in this sense it iterates this collision of both the physical and the spiritual coming together. You know, I'll bring the bones, I'll bring the physical, I'll bring the container for the Holy Spirit, and then you bring the fire, Lord, you bring the Spirit, you bring the, really all the abstract, like the conscience and the action, and you place my steps before me, and you number the days before me, and all of that. I'm not gonna lie, I'm also getting very distracted sitting on Genius looking at the lyrics, because Wallows keeps coming up. They're my other favorite band, and it just makes me so happy that I'm like having a moment with my two favorite bands, even though I'm the only one who knows this. This is my favorite time to be on this website when like both my bands have new music coming out. So anyway, if you haven't heard Wallows, 10 out of 10 recommend. They kept popping up and I couldn't not say something. So I'm also very grateful and thankful for Wallows. Can we like have them tour together, please? I mean, they both have new music coming out. It's the perfect time. Okay, so, but yes, in that way of like how the Spirit comes in, as He says, I know you'll make the fire, my bones will make it grow. Inevitably through like living life with God, He's going to mold us. He's going to keep putting conviction on our heart to bring us more in alignment with His heart as we go on living and up until we get to heaven, when we finally have perfect union and the perfect imago Dei, right, that we were always supposed to have, that we are intended to have to begin with. As a whole, this verse is very much like an urging for God to be God, even in spite of all of the darkness around, and also for God to do what He will in us. It's, you know, it's basically like praying to God, you're gonna do this, but I trust that you're gonna do this anyway, and that if I bring all that I have, all of me, you will do something with it, even if I don't believe it all the time. And so I like how this verse is kind of just raining truth over Himself as He's singing this, but it's also just reiterating to God who He already is, which basically is what worship is as a whole, like singing back to God who He is and praising Him for exactly who He is and what He has promised to do. So then we go into the chorus, where the thesis to the song is laid out. Where we're from, there's no sun, our hometown's in the dark. And He repeats this to then emphasize at the end again, our hometown's in the dark. The chorus has this guitar undercurrent throughout, I noted, and then the synth kind of pops in a little bit, and then once the last lyrics are stated in the chorus, it has this explosion into what I can only describe as a rave. And this reminded me of kind of this musical theme that they tend to have in their songs of like the music or like the loudest part of the music is representative of like the routine. And so I feel like this thesis is like the epitome of the human routine is like people living in darkness. And so the music heightened at its peak here is kind of emphasis that this is the daily rhythm that's happening. I think Slow Town is maybe the other song that I'm kind of thinking of, that he paints the picture not just through the words, but the music is like the rhythm to which the narrative is flowed out, if that makes sense. So it kind of like comes together to further illustrate what the literal rhythm of living is in the thesis that he's laid out. So in that way, he uses rhythm as a double meaning through the actual music, which I like a lot. So of course I have to also mention, like, the Midwest is just dark. So I think this is just literal because they're from Ohio. Ohio is dark a lot. Today in Michigan, it's actually sunny, which is rare this time of year, but by and large, there definitely is a lot of cloudiness in the Midwest. So I think for everyone in the Midwest, this lyric is just accurate geographically. But of course, here we're mostly emphasizing the spiritual and how, again, with fixation to darkness that we are prone to do, it also means that we easily forget God and all of the goodness that actually is around us as well. Our hometown is in dark, but it's also in light. And that's what this song is not saying, but that's also the truth that is present and kind of weaved throughout the verses around the chorus too. So there's no sun because it's just dark. But then he also fits in the second line, we're no one, our hometown's in the dark, which probably is more an allusion to the fact that your hometown is more likely to like see you for who you are, more so if you're like of celebrity or fame status. There's always going to be those people who don't see you for that at all, but they see through to exactly who you've always been. And so they probably mean a little more in that technical sense, but in the spiritual sense, I take this as like the people who scoff at Christianity and this idea that even though we are like inheritors to the greatest thing possible, we're no one here in this dark place on earth. And there's this lack of recognition of the eternal peace that people either refuse to think about or reject or just don't know about. And so in that way, regardless of the reasoning, in our place spiritually as Christians, we are no one to a lot of people. And also because a lot of people just measure things by earthly standards, a lot of people are not thinking eternally in that same way, which bears a very different weight than when you live in eternity, and that this world is not all that there is. And then the final thing I noted is for the term in the dark, that can also mean to be out of touch. And so I think saying that our hometown is in the dark, it can also mean that it's disconnected, right? And in that same way, kind of like what I just said with we're no one, this idea that so many people are disconnected from their core identity, which I said earlier is like Imago Dei. Everyone is made in the image of God, whether they choose to believe or accept it or not. And so, like, how many people are in the dark of this reality, right? There's way too many people in the dark. And so this phrase in the dark is also a double meaning that I think is important to be a focal point of the song, to remind people that, yeah, there are a lot of people in the dark, and they deserve to know that they're in the dark, and they also deserve to know that there's not just darkness, but there's also light too. So a lot of the rest of the song is repetitive, but we have one more verse where he says, put away all the gods your father served today, put away your traditions. Believe me when I say we don't know how to put back the power in our soul. We don't know where to find what once was in our bones. And until I just listened to this for this podcast, I kind of forgot a lot of this verse, and I heard it again and I was like, wow, this is so good, and I'm so glad that they wrote this. And I always, you know, because of my testimony, I get very passionate about idolatry specifically, so I love that this was addressing this a bit in this verse. And yeah, it's honestly just a fire verse, in my opinion. Is fire like antiquated now? I don't know, but me and people in my band at church say it, so I mean, some people still use it. He goes into like this urging against idolatry, which is a common cultural theme that we continue to struggle with, but also just historically and throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament has always been a struggle in various cultures throughout the world, from Israel to the United States now. So for this, I pulled out 1 John 5:21. We're going on opposite ends of the Bible here, which is cool. And this is the last verse, very short, in 1 John. And it says, little children, keep yourselves from idols. So once again, proof that I pulled this one out specifically because it is in the New Testament. Like, idolatry is very much not just something that is like, what's the word? It's not just specific to ancient cultures, but it very much is still prevalent in modern cultures. And I think it can be easy to think that, like, oh, well, like, I don't have a statue that I worship. No, but we still very much have idolatry. And I think it can easily be something that's misconstrued and misunderstood, which I'm sure is exactly what Satan wants to make people not realize how prevalent it actually is and how common it actually is. And it doesn't, you know, back to this theme of things don't just look one certain way. I mean, you think of even like verbiage and lingo in current culture of saying like king and queen to people who are obviously not monarchs, but even just that idea that we are giving people words that imply that they don't rank the same, that they're somehow above us, or that some people are below. And I think in general, idolatry tends to be this idea that you're putting someone on a pedestal, not just literally, but also like you can be putting someone or even something, it doesn't even have to be a person, again, doesn't look one certain way, but not just raising it to a god status, but also this idea of ranking some people as if we're not all on an even playing field, as if some people are somehow better. And I think that's kind of exactly what celebrity culture is we just like decide really arbitrarily just based on people's jobs and people's talents. We just decide that some people are somehow worth more recognition, that they're worth fanaticism. Very interesting when you think about it. Like, how did we start fame? How did we start celebrity? How did we make that a thing? You know, it's a very man-made thing. The saddest thing to me, and something that really intrigues me about celebrity and fame and all of that as a whole, is how quick we are to dehumanize people, right? Because idolatry is also the idea that you're dehumanizing people. Even like Tyler and Josh can be dehumanized, and I don't know, that's just an interesting concept to me, and I think about it all the time. Like, yes, these people are very well known and we can love what they do, but why do we feel the need to strip away their humanity and to think that they're perfect or that they're somehow better than us? It's just this intriguing human mindset and phenomenon that it interests me so much, because I find so much humanity in these people, and I try really hard, not just because of my testimony and my past with idolatry, but I try really hard to humanize celebrities because I know so many people don't. And it's just so interesting to me. Like, why do we do that? Why do we separate them? Why do we, I don't know. It very much intrigues me. And where's that line of recognition to which your mind would cross over to the dehumanization point, you know? Like, is it a certain number of followers, a certain number of people who know you? Like, at what point do you cross over from, like, this is a normal person to this is someone who's cooler than I'll ever be or something? I don't know. Anyone else? If anyone else has any thoughts on this, like, the sociology intrigues me so much, and I would love to hear other people's thoughts and opinions. Nugget has some thoughts she came up to share. That was a whole tangent, but it's such a topical interest of mine. So if anyone has any good, knows of any good books or any type of writing on fame, celebrity, I would love to read it. Please send it my way. And if you love reading and you love fiction, I would highly recommend Hank Green's duology. First book is called An Absolutely Remarkable Thing, and a huge theme in it is, like, fame. And he kind of analyzes it from the famous person's, like, over, you know, it's kind of this, like, overnight sensation type thing, and how it happens to this character and how it makes them feel. And so if you're interested in that from, like, the other vantage point of, like, being the person who gets fame, I would highly recommend that duology. It was really fun to read and very intriguing, and it's also sci-fi, so it was a very cool concept, and also, like, very thought-provoking considering the culture that we have today and the technology that we have today. So I just thought it was very well done. Even if you don't like John Green, I would highly recommend Hank Green, because his stories are, like, fairly different, at least in terms of, like, topic and theme. It's still, like, young adult, but it's not romance-centric. So, yeah, I can't say enough good things about it. I would highly recommend. So, check it out. That's my recommendation if you're interested in fame and celebrity too. But yeah, examples, like, musicians. As you can imagine, I just think Taylor Swift is, like, the most idolized person nowadays. You see her everywhere. She's all over advertisements. She's constantly making new music, like, and she's great at what she does, you know. It's not that she doesn't deserve recognition, but it's like, that is the epitome of someone who is just, like, put on a pedestal, and people truly believe she's on, like, a whole other level of a human being, and it's just wild. People can even do this with pastors, right? And I feel like that's how, like, church corruption happens, is when we, and maybe even the pastors themselves also believe that they're somehow, like, set apart, that they're somehow better than everyone, you know, whatever it might be. It's so dangerous to think that we somehow have, like, classes of humans, basically. It's basically what idolatry is buying into that. And then actors, basically any other type of celebrity, right? But I do think it is important to note we can also do this as Christians with other Christians, which is very ironic to me, because we are the most knowledgeable of, like, how broken and equal in brokenness everyone is. So it's very ironic that we do that. And the implication is also, by ranking, you're also implying that, like, everyone else is common, you know? Like, we joke about, like, I'm just a peasant, but also it's like, okay, but sometimes our actions, like, are kind of implying that some people are, like, peasants, basically, and some people aren't. And that's just, it's just not true. So put away your idolatry, which, by the way, your father served and your grandfather, and, like, nothing is new under the sun, Q. Solomon and Ecclesiastes. And then put away your traditions. So on the other hand, we have, like, overtly religious, legalistic, too focused on rituals and rules, people who just nitpick denominational differences, and this is also where my home church has talked a lot about buckets in terms of like there are different sized buckets for how important a Christian argument is, meaning like a point at which people disagree. The most important thing is like, do you believe in Jesus? You know, do you believe in God? Do you believe in the crucifixion and the resurrection? Do you believe that you're sinful? All of those are like, that's core. That matters more than anything else. Now, if you're like, I don't think we should have a worship song like that. I don't think church should be that charismatic. I don't think a church should be that conservative. Like, those are not as important of buckets. You can have your preferences or whatever, but it's not gonna make and break your salvation. The bucket concept is basically pointing out that only a few things, a few difference in opinions among Christians are actually like salvific issues. They're actually gonna impact whether or not you have salvation, right? But the majority of things that we disagree on are not that important. And so people who are tight-fisted on their traditions are usually focusing on things that are not nearly as important. I've known people who are like, Catholics are not real Christians. Frankly, that's just not true. There would also be people who would say, people who are non-denominational are not Christians. And that's also not true, and you know, everything in between. But nothing's that black and white. Of course, there will always be people who are not genuine believers, but there are people from every denomination who are genuine believers. And at the end of the day, that's not where our focus should be. Our focus should be if people believe in Jesus, if people believe in the Trinity, if people have salvation, if people are trying to share the gospel, if people are trying to love others, if people are really taking scripture to heart and trying to be more like God, those are the things that matter. So put away all the religious nonsense and arguments that are not important is how I take that second line. Also, the whole like getting stuck up in all these non-essential arguments in the Christian faith, it also takes away from focusing on things that matter more, like sharing the gospel, applying and being in the lives of non-believers, and just generally applying our faith. One of my pastors spoke in a recent podcast about how too many Christians get caught up in doing all the Christian activities, the Bible studies and the potlucks and prayer groups and everything, and not enough Christians are actually going out into the rest of the world. They're in their Christian bubbles and more than they are in the world among non-believers. And really, if you think about it practically, that's kind of a huge waste of time when there are people who generally there are people who genuinely need God, who don't have him, and they need the light in their dark hometown. They need the truth in their very lie-filled world. And what a disservice for us to just hold ourselves up in comfort when there are people who really, really need what we have to give and to share. And how selfish too, right? And we've all been there. We've all had our selfish seasons, but we can't forget we live in a dark hometown that needs light. So go forth, my brethren. That's the thesis today. We don't know how to put back the power in our soul, and I think this is crucial. We don't. We just don't. We cannot do this. We cannot do this for each other. We cannot do this of our own accord. The only way we can get power and strength is from God. It is not in our own doing. It is not by our own will. Only God can give us the strength that we need. Only God can save other people. Okay, I've struggled with a God complex I think a lot of people have. So if you have, you're not alone. But at the end of the day, God is the one who changes hearts, not us. All we can do is give his word, and he takes it. We don't change people. He does through us. But yeah, we can't carry other people's burdens. We can't save other people. That's God's job. We also can't right every wrong. That is God's job. And we also don't know where to find what once was in our bones, which I also connected back to Imago Dei, being in the image of God. We don't know where to find it. People need to know it. But my point was, God can redirect us back to it. I just had a horrifying incident where it stopped recording because my disc was full and I needed to like find a way to delete some things. So that was horrifying. Anyway, clearly I need to do some cleaning up on my laptop, but for now, I'm gonna finish this podcast. So my last notes are musically, as he repeats some of the refrain and the chorus throughout the rest of the song, the drums kind of move around in the sonic landscape throughout your headphones, as well as the bass line with the synth. And I feel like it shows the spiritual movement and represents how even as we go through everything, it's constantly moving and changing. And the darkness can be overbearing one moment and then dissipated by light the next. And so even when things feel rough, just know that they're temporary and the light will eventually come around again, even when it feels like everything is really dark. So overall, my notes for Hometown are that it's a song of our spiritual reality and also acknowledging what that reality is. The emphasis of redemption is also the double meaning, to allow non-believers to be able to sing a message like this, to reiterate what is true spiritually, even if they don't believe it. I just like that concept of people singing a truth that they don't even know they're singing. But I feel like there's something beautiful to be said that in a concert setting, like, they're singing it anyway, which is cool. I love thinking about that idea throughout all of their songs and how that applies to a live setting where people of all backgrounds are singing the same words together, and how even in that one moment, even if they all have different interpretations, it's uniting everyone under truth, even if they don't know what that is exactly. I just think that's cool how God can take something and make it bigger than everyone in that moment interpreting whatever they are in that moment. And then I love how this song is also a huge reminder of reality and our lack of control, our need to focus on God and gratitude, and also the hope that throughout all of it, there is constant redemption happening, constant moldability, like I said before, of us as vessels, and to be redirected back toward God's heart, even if we have a season or a time where it seems like all we can focus on is the bad. Once again, this song is a great way that they also redirect us back to God, as another great coping mechanism in that way, which I very much appreciate, and I hope you do too. That being said, I think that's pretty much all I have to say about Hometown. I feel like this song is definitely underrated, and I would love to know what songs you guys would love to hear on this upcoming Clancy tour. They wrote down all of their discography, including regional at best. So if I hear Slowtown or Be Concerned, I'm going to like give an unearthly scream. And if I hear any song really that I've never heard before, if I heard March to the Sea, I would lose my mind. I love all of those like very allegorical songs, as you know. That's why I'm here. So I would also love to know, like, if and when you guys go to a show, what songs they play, if they play anything specific to your show. We can compare notes, as it were. But yeah, I'm excited to just get to continue to not only talk about the band, but also talk about what's currently happening. Obviously, we're going to get a new album very soon, so we're all anxiously waiting for that. But that all being said, if you have any thoughts at all, if you just like really love Hometown, let me know. I want to hear from you. And you can also email entrenchpodcast@gmail.com with a written account of your 21 Pilots story, some of your favorite concert moments, what you're excited for, and your favorite memories you have in general related to the band. You can also reach out with an episode request if you want to analyze a song, video, or album with me. And if you'd like to contribute to the analysis we've already covered, you can send an email or message me on Instagram @entrench_pod. You can find Entrench on Podbean, Verbal, Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music. I look forward to hearing from all of you. Tune in next time for Not Today. Thank you so much for listening, friends. Stay alive and remember, Entrench, you're not alone.